ready.
NBC didn't have to create rape allegations to keep from selling to Bill Cosby. That's like me saying, I don't want to sell you my car, but then going around telling people you rob banks.
For real talk.
Hey man, I'm just gonna say it. If you don't think you sexist, ask yourself why you champion LeVar Ball but think Cardi B should go away.
All the time.
Not everybody's gonna like it, but don't ever, ever apologize for trying to be a better person.
Welcome to the Spann Report with your host, Mr. Spann.
Chop it up, do or die. Do you wanna ride in the backseat of a Caddy? Chop it up, do or
it
die.
Was 7LPM, flying out to them house in a BM, sipping Seagram, showing all the weed stem, touching all my foul fam. Moving to the back so I can see who beeping his power pam. Free to the phone with a slow limb, been a trip out, shitting with 3127628. Three line connection, us some rest that wanted affection. This brand new weed, we got the drink you need, and plus we strapped with two protections. I put the phone in the hook, then I pause for a minute, cause I forgot why I'm at the hoe. And the $30 guy make the hoes wanna snap, I straight up check the hoe. Really doubt to the crib, oh.
Do you wanna ride in the backseat of a Caddy? Chop it up.
It's five to live hoes, 3 miles per hour. Like we running up on some rivals. Never to deny, no, these bitches need fly low. Introduce myself. A to the motherfucker came in to recognize that I lose myself. Juice myself. As you take one pour, love, pass it to the left and Self send the niggas a take two pour, cause they thinking about self and P-I-M-P-ology. But logically, be learning these hoes biology. And obviously, well,
ain't this some shit? Pull up in the C-A-D-I.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Spann Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Spann. This is episode number 210 of the report, and right now we rocking out to some old school Do or Die, man. I just came home from the shot, so y'all know what it is. Rock out with your boy. What's happening? What's happening, Jackie?
Fancy clothes, fresh Georgia bowl, flexing 150. Chop up that paper hoe, chop up that paper hoe. Watch where your lips go, girl, that's my tip slow. To the tempo, instrumental. Real simple when you're fucking with a pimp, though. Get a vibe in the back seat, that's how be in the cab with your best with your young lads. Smoking on that finest grab, never miss what you never had. At last, P-I-M-P-ology, but logically, be learning these hoes biology. And honestly, well,
we wanna ride in the back seat of a Caddy, chop it up.
And collecting no dope and tips, but I be spitting more games than a mouth full of poker chips to get them hoes with the open lips and the provoking hips. I never gotta tell them any lies. Have them looking in the city skies. Get up in the kitty styles, cause I'm blessed with a look of innocence. Good sex, peanut butter complex, and some pretty eyes. Pity cries on my strategy side. Yo, one out of me gotta be right, that'll be the flat of me right. But if the head the bomb, come on, suck a nigga dick. Members of my clique wanna see what that'll be like. I know you wanna try that to the rhythm of a hi hat. Don't be bogus and deny that. I done got a hold of that my fellas wanna train while she lie back. Now, motherfucker, can you buy that? Where your ride at? On the passenger side of yo ho, trying to come up on another G. The broad all up under me, trying to smother me, looking lovely while I wrote another beat. Suddenly, she learned that I don't deal with emotions. But when we in the room, she rubbing me with lotion. Coming like an ocean coast and have a sick, thinking me into a die dick cause you love potion. The word no is never said. Twist to be giving women dick in the bed until they sick in the head. And if I ever leave whoever dead, they ain't tricking the feds. I'm spitting gang, but it's chicken and bread. Kicking them legs in the air like a player do. Then be little in a day or two. Afterwards, I'ma say a crew. Now that's a pimp type shit that be low and AK and do. Wearing gray and blue. If a hoe in the holler, then you a player if you hit them ends and get the dividends. But you a pimp if you can get the same hoe, don't wanna freak your friends.
Yeah, man. It's been a while since I heard that shit, man. But coming back home from Chicago, man, it's like it's almost like it was either that or it was either some Crucial Conflict or anybody other than fucking R. Kelly, really. You know what I mean? So, and it just still goes, right? So, yeah, man, Do or Die, picture this album. Y'all know what it is, man. Po Pimp, classic album, man. Classic fucking song. Came out in, I want to say, 95, 96. Something like that. Right around the time I got my driver's license and the shit, you know, and I was actually able to ride out to it, you know what I mean? So yeah, man, we We are really feeling nostalgic here at the Spirit Report Podcast, man. So before I get into, you know, what's been going on with me the last week and getting into some of this news and some of this pop culture shit and everything else, of course, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with your boy here at the Spirit Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those messages on the voicemail. I'll play those voicemail messages here on the show, respond to you right here on the show live as well. You can also email me here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave those emails, and of course, we will reply to those emails here live on the show as well. Follow your boy on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there. What's up, Stephanie? How you doing, baby? And yeah, man, go ahead and also follow the Span Report on Twitter as well, man. That's @thespanreport on Twitter. So go ahead and follow both of those if you want to, and follow, you know, get all the rigmarole of what's going on here with the show, right? You can also go to the store, man. Hit up our store. Get yourself a t-shirt. Get yourself a coffee mug. Get yourself, like, you know, a onesie for the babies. You know, I know some of y'all got some babies coming, man. Get y'all some little cute shit, man. You know what I'm saying? Outfit the kids with the Span Report shit. No, real talk. We really do appreciate everybody who goes to the Span Report Podcast Network store over at tpublic.com, man. The link will be in the show notes. Go there, and you can get yourself some merch, man. Real talk. We appreciate everybody who does that. And for all of your Span Report needs, man, go to www.thespanreport.com. Everything's available there. You can watch replays of the shows there. You can vote in the polls there. You can leave comments there. You can donate to the That's what I get with drinking beer while I'm doing the show, right? But yeah, man, you can you can donate to the show there, man, as often as you like, as much as you like. We really do appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that. And yeah, man, everything's available at www.thespanreport.com, man. Real talk. But it has been a little bit of time since the last time I talked to y'all. I didn't really get a chance to do a live show last week because I was out of town. My grandmother was turning 82 last week, man. So we definitely had to go and pay homage to dear old Granny, man. Granny is she's a feisty woman, man. I love my grandma so much, man. And I always like kind of take the opportunity to, whenever I can, try to get home to Chicago and celebrate these milestones, man. Because especially with grandma getting up in age, man, you know, you don't really know how much time you got left with your peoples. You know what I mean? So I want to, you know, at every opportunity, celebrate those, man. And, you know, Granny just turned 82. And, you know, like, it's one of those things when you go home and your family is excited to see you and they haven't seen you in a real long time. And, you know, one thing about my grandma, man, is like, and I'm sure this isn't just my grandma. It's probably true for a whole lot of folks, man. When your people get up in age, you know, they start telling you the same story, you know, over and over again, right? And I don't mind it. I don't mind it whatsoever, man. My grandma done told me the same story about how my father came over to the house and like informed her on how he was going to take care of me and my mama when she tells me that story. She told me the story about the first time she got high off some weed, man. She'll tell me that story. I did learn some new shit though, man. I learned that my grandfather used to drive from Chicago to Detroit drunk than a motherfucker, man. I didn't know that. I did not know that until I came to home to Chicago this trip, man. So I always get a chance to learn something new when I go home to Chicago, man, and get a chance to visit with Granny, right? Now, another thing that I love about my grandma, man, is that, you know, my grandmother is kind of like, she was the first person that I really knew that was like, you know, really good at the passive aggressiveness. You know, like, she wants you to do something, but she won't really just come out and say it, right? So, but you knew what she meant. You knew what she meant, and you got up and you got your ass up and you did it, right? So grandma would always do this thing where, like, she'd say, well, I guess I get on up out here and cut this grass. And you be like, come on, Granny, you ain't about to get out here and cut no motherfucking grass, man. Come on, now, don't. I got it, you know what I mean? I got it, you know? Well, I guess I get on out here and wash this car, you know? But like, Grandma, sit down, man. Ain't nobody about to have you out there in that 90-degree weather wash no car. Man, sit down, I got you. And then that night again, you know, nigga kind of play with her a little bit, you know, like, well, I guess I get on in here and wash these dishes. I'm like, oh, man. Okay, Granny, I'll see you later. I'm about to go to the store real quick. You want some? So, yeah, man. Yo, celebrate your peoples as often as you can, man. Real talk. I really do believe in that, man. I hate when I do come home and sometimes there's family members that I haven't seen for a long time where I still don't see them. You know what I mean? And I would hate to be like the next time you see him would be at like a funeral or like some shit like that. You know, the only time families get together is during funerals and like maybe weddings. You know what I mean? Like, no, we should really, you should definitely celebrate your peoples and be as close as you possibly can, man. And I'm not talking about y'all who got toxic relationships, man. But when you have some people that you love and you care about, man, see about them. I know a lot of times, man, when, you know, we're dealing with issues, man, you know, you got family that live in different parts of the country, man. You know, and everybody's kind of consumed with their own lives and with everything that they got going on. It doesn't take much, man, to just kind of reach out and at every opportunity, you know, just see about your peoples, man. Real talk. So shout out to Granny. Happy birthday, Granny. I love you. And yeah, man. So that was, you know, pretty much what it was, man. I was out of town last week and, you know, we were supposed to do a beer and chicken, right? So let me tell y'all what happened with the beer and chicken, man. This is partially my fault that we don't have a beer and chicken podcast. So we didn't have a beer and chicken podcast last week, right? So I wanted to do a beer and chicken podcast on Memorial Day. We talked to, y'all heard it. If you listen to Beer and Chicken, y'all heard it. We did the thing. We're like, yo, we're going to do it on Memorial Day. Now, your homeboy Cliff was out of town, you know, doing his, just what I was talking about doing, right? Going to see about his peoples. He had an honor, somebody who was turning 102, you know what I'm saying? He's going down south. He's going to visit about them, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, so when I'm in Chicago, I thought I was going to see Cliff when I was in Chicago. Didn't see Cliff when I was in Chicago. He was out of town. So I'm like, all right, cool. But we still going to do the show Memorial Day, right? Because I'll be back home Memorial Day. Bet. Everybody said, yeah, cool. What I didn't know was that the nigga Cliff was going to be driving back home to Chicago on Memorial Day, right? Well, no, actually, I take that back. What happened was, I think there was a game on, and it was Memorial Day, and people were kind of tied up in their own shit. So I'm like, you know what? We'll schedule this for the next day. And Cliff was scheduled, like, was driving home, yada, 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 and the homeboy Walt had to work. So, yeah, that's why we didn't have a beer and chicken. It's been really fucking hectic. It's been really hectic. But I did make sure to put out episode 209 with the guys from the Black, White, and Yellowish podcast. And, you know, you guys were able to get some sort of, you know, reasoning by around what happened and the confusion around that, man. And we were able to kind of hash some things out, man. So I really did want, I felt like it was important to put that out and you guys had an opportunity to listen to and check that out as well, man. But, yeah, man, we're going to get right into this, man. It's been, I'm a little rusty, so bear with your boy. But we're going to hop right on into this. And the first thing we're going to do, of course, man, we got to hop on into this motherfucking news, man. Now, God damn it, where's my news music? Oh, man, this can't be happening to me right now. No, that's not it. There it is. All right. The first thing we're going to talk about here in the news today, man, is, Kim Kardashian. Kim Kardashian she's been in the news a lot over the last couple weeks, man, especially on social media. She was kind of getting into a little Twitter feud with the dude Ryan Fest over in Chicago, one of the people who kind of helped Kanye West start out in his music career, man. And, you know, a little tiff about the Donda's House charity that Ryan Fest is currently running, that they dropped the name from and everything else, right? But that's not why I want to talk about Kim Kardashian today. The reason why we go talk about Kim Kardashian is Kim Kardashian went to the White House and she met with none other than Donald Trump. All right, so Kim Kardashian, she was actually there. She was advocated on behalf of one woman. Her name was, I believe, Alice Johnson. As a matter of fact, I thought I had this story pulled up. Where is it? Okay, here we go. So she was meeting with Donald Trump, and she wanted to talk about prison reform, but actually she was talking about one person in particular, and that lady's name was Alice Johnson, right? So Alice Johnson is a woman. She's been in prison for, I believe, 21 years. It was her first offense. It was a drug offense. And I believe, you know, she fell under the mandatory minimums when it came to, you know, the drug sentencing laws and everything else. Right. And Kim Kardashian, she heard about Alice Johnson's story, and she had wanted to advocate for her. And she was very serious about it. And she took this all the way to the White House. Right now, initially, when I first heard about this story, I was a bit dismissive, right? And I was dismissive in the sense that, like, you know, for one, it kind of came across to me as like, yo, I'm not a lawyer, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express, you know, last night. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just did not, I was not really like here for Kim Kardashian and the whole, I'm going to the White House to meet the Trump, you know, like I kind of felt like, yo, this was, and I still to a certain degree felt like this was like a media opportunity, right? This is a photo opportunity. But as I learned more about this particular story, I still feel like it was a media and photo opportunity, but not necessarily so much for Kim, but more so for Donald J. Trump, right? So when I got into this with like a friend of mine, man, we were going back and forth, you know, about this because, you know, there is a contingent of people on like, you know, who what some would consider left leaning, you know, socially progressive, you know, in the socially progressive space. There is a contingent of folks who are just like, yo, man, we got to do something. We can't be always at odds with this dude. We have to at some point figure out ways we can work with this guy and try to get shit done that way, right? And I understand why people will believe that they need to do those things, but I also, knowing the history and the track record of this dude currently occupying the White House, I don't believe that's what he's about. I don't believe that he's trying to work with anybody. I believe he's using folks for photo opportunities for the appearance of caring about these issues, right? So, you know, Kim Kardashian, she goes to the White House. Everyone's covering the fact that she made, you know, this is on, you know, Entertainment Weekly and, you know, like Extra and, you know, a lot of the entertainment magazines and television shows are carrying this along with, you know, sort of the dismissive way that, you know, political media was kind of, you know, was kind of covering it. You know, like, you know, the New York Post like was real reckless in how they presented the story about Kim Kardashian going to, you know, the White House and everything else. And everybody keeps, you know, like, not everybody, but there's a certain contingency of people who just keep referring to her sex tape, man. And I'm like, so far beyond that, so far, like, okay, whatever. I'm just more so like, yo, listen, when it comes to prison reform, sentencing reform, there are a lot of people who are experts in this field who aren't even touching this with a 10-foot pole. And the reason that they're not touching this with a 10-foot pole is because they know that Donald J. Trump isn't sincere in his efforts to reach out to these communities, to do anything about prison reform. Yeah, his son-in-law may be all about it, but if he really, like, if he was about that, if he was about this life, he would have been signaling this a long time ago. He would be speaking about this all the time. He doesn't do that, right? And so Kim Kardashian, she goes and she talks to Donald Trump about pardoning Alice Johnson, right? Alice Johnson is a worthy candidate to have her sentence commuted and to be pardoned for what happened to her, right? Or what she was involved in, right? Let's make no mistake. This was a decision she made. She was found guilty of it. But she's also someone worthy to have, you know, been granted a pardon or, you know, given clemency and whatever else, right? But that's not what this dude does. He takes the meeting. He acts as if he's listening to her. He takes a photo with Kim Kardashian in the White House. Kim Kardashian leaves the White House and she's talking about, yo, I really feel like he was listening to me. I feel like we might have some, you know, we're getting some things done here and everything else. And then what happens, not only 24 hours after Kim Kardashian leaves the grounds of the White House, this dude is talking about he pardons Dinesh D'Souza, who pled guilty to campaign finance reform or campaign finance laws. He's considering a pardon for Martha Stewart, who was convicted of insider trading and lying to federal investigators. He is considering a pardon for Rod Blagojevich, who was the former governor of Illinois, my home state, former governor there, was convicted of corruption and trying to sell the Senate seat that was vacated by President Barack Obama. Like, so, and these are things that, like, we've seen over the course of the last 24 hours that Donald Trump is doing without any sort of, like, he's like, yo, I can do this like that? Okay, then get Dinesh D'Souza up out of there. Let's go ahead and pardon him right now. Now, if anybody's familiar with Dinesh D'Souza has been on, like, he's been on record on Twitter and in publications, like having like the most vile, excuse me, the most vile opinions of Barack Obama. Barack Obama is the boy you can't take out of the ghetto. He had movies made about Barack Obama trying to destroy America, that Barack Obama was not he was not born here. He's a Muslim and his father, yada, all these different horrible, racist, vile things that we know that is trumpeted by a lot of people who support not only Donald Trump, but a lot of things that come out of the alt-right, right? This is the guy who said, like, yo, I can do this unilaterally, and this is the guy that I'm going to pardon. And then I'm considering these other folks. Now, there's been a lot of talk about whether or not he's doing this to signal other people within the who's in trouble concerning like the Russia investigation and all these other things, right? There's a lot of people talking about that, but I'm going to bring this all the way back to Alice Johnson and Kim Kardashian going to see this dude about the release of Alice Johnson. Now, if Alice Johnson isn't worthy of a pardon, neither are the people that this dude is currently considering right now. And if Donald Trump can do this with just a decision, like he doesn't have to go through anybody, like, yo, I'm the president, I can make this happen, I can just make the decision, I don't need any, there's no process for this, I can just make this happen. Kim Kardashian should have been walking out of that door with a pardon for Alice Johnson. The minute she walked out, Alice Johnson should have been like getting prepared to get sent home. But that's not what this was about. And this is the thing that I've been trying to talk to my, like, some friends of mine about for the last couple of days, who were like, yo, man, well, we got to fight. You know, we got to take our opportunities where we can. And I'm telling you, like, this dude is not to be negotiated with. He's not. Steve Harvey, like, and here's another thing, too, like, because, you know, one of the contentions is like everybody who goes to talk to him gets torn down. And the reason why we're telling you not to talk to this dude is simply because you're going to be made use of, like, basically everybody who goes to talk to Donald Trump, they get a photo with Donald Trump and Donald Trump gets to appear, like he gives a fuck about what it is you're talking about. But you never get nothing on the back end, right? Has anybody seen what the fuck Steve Harvey was able to get out of Donald Trump since that meeting at Trump Tower? Have we seen any results from that meeting whatsoever? Nothing, right? We haven't gotten anything out of that meeting from Steve Harvey with Trump when he met with Steve Harvey. What about Jim Brown? Did Jim Brown get anything out of that meeting with Steve Harvey other than a motherfucking photo at Trump Tower? Anything? Can we point to anything concrete that Jim Brown got out of meeting with him? What about the gang leaders in Chicago were supposed to meet with Donald Trump? Did that ever happen? Remember that pastor, the dude that looked like what's my man's name from G-Unit, man? Lloyd Banks. Did we get anything out of that? Did anything come to fruition when it came to that? Like, all this is this dude getting to appear as if he gives a damn when he doesn't. And Kim Kardashian lending her celebrity and lending her social media followers and everything else, that's who comes over to see, well, maybe Donald Trump really does get it. He's using these motherfuckers, man. And it's like, it was amazing to me, like, as much as Alice Johnson deserves to be home with her family, Kim Kardashian going to meet Donald Trump is yet another example of this dude using celebrity and a very valid concern to make the appearance that he cares when ultimately he doesn't. And so I don't fault Kim Kardashian for going to try to, you know, get something done, but at the same time, yeah, it's almost like you kind of know going in this shit ain't about to work, and it's kind of a waste of time. But at least both of y'all get to appear like y'all doing something, right? And I think another thing too, when it comes to Kim Kardashian, man, like a lot of folks, especially in the black community, I think a lot of folks just don't trust this woman. They just don't, you know. I'm not that big of a fan of Kim Kardashian, and I'm not going to make any bones about it, but like, people just don't think that they care. So yeah, man, that's going on. Now, another thing in the news that I kind of want to talk about was the fact that the Obamas about to get paid off the back of Netflix, man. They signed a multi-year contributor deal with Netflix. All right, this story here is coming out of the New York Times. It says Barack Obama and Barack and Michelle Obama are raking in the cash thanks to the influence of a former. Oh no, this isn't the New York Times. This is the New York Post. Ah, so it's gonna get saucy. This is thanks to the influence of a former campaign supporter. The couple last week signed a creative production deal with Netflix. Their one entertainment industry source could be valued at more than $50 million. Ted Sarandos, a major campaign contributor for Obama and the streaming giant's creative content chief, who oversees an $8 billion budget, helped to broker the deal, the source told the Post. Sarandos and his wife, Nicole Avant, bundled nearly $600,000 in contributions to Obama from their friends and associates during the 2012 presidential campaign. The couple is friends with the Obamas, and Avant served as U.S. ambassador to the Bahamas from 2009 to 2011 during the former president's first term. Her father, Clarence, a music exec, bundled a total of nearly $450,000 for Obama's presidential campaigns. Now, one thing for sure, I don't give a damn about whether or not these folks contributed to Obama's presidential run. I really don't. I don't even understand the relevance as to why this is even important. The fact remains is the Obamas are, they do have a production deal with the with Netflix, right? And there's a lot of conservatives, who are talking about they're gonna cancel their Netflix subscriptions. And to that I say, bye niggas. Bye. I don't think people can, like, here's the thing, man. When it comes to this shit, man, like, there's some folk that, like, I don't even think these people really understand why they hate Obama so much. Right? Like, what did Obama do? What did Obama do to Republicans to make them hate him so much? Like, what did he actually do? What are Obama's crimes? I really do want to know. There wasn't a scandal under Obama, unless you want to count Benghazi, and Benghazi was like some things that, like, you know, on Fox News, it was like, yo, they did not send help to, the Libyan the Libyan embassy in reasonable enough time, right? And that could be a legitimate complaint if it happens the way that the Republicans are saying it happened, but we know it hadn't. They had multiple fucking investigations that went into that, found really like nothing incriminating anybody, not even Susan Rice, not Secretary Clinton, nothing, right? But this continues to be a thing. Yo, pack up and go. I mean, I know a lot of y'all talking about y'all gonna cut the cord, man. Like, how you gonna cut the cord and then like cut the cord cutting like essential? You know what I'm saying? You gonna substitute it with Amazon Prime Video? I mean, it's cool and all, but it's not Netflix, man. Like, you gonna substitute it with like Hulu? I mean, Hulu is cool and all, but it ain't Netflix, man. Netflix got some shit. Netflix is like right up next to HBO to me now, man. Netflix didn't like really crush the game when it came to the streaming shit. So the fact that the Obamas have a production deal with Netflix is really riling up conservatives. The interesting thing about this, though, is that, like, they do this as if the Obamas still owe the American people something, right? The Obamas haven't fulfilled their obligations as public servants. Well, Michelle Obama is no longer a public servant. She's no longer the first lady. Barack Obama is no longer the president of the United States. Like, he is under no obligations to do anything for America if he chooses not to. He just doesn't have to do it. He just doesn't. Like, yo, I did my 8 years, man. Y'all had me for 8 years. Y'all beat me the fuck up for 8 years. And now you mad that I'm getting money after the fact that I'm gone? Like, I mean, it's a lot different that I'm getting the money now that I'm gone as opposed to enriching myself while I'm doing the fucking job, i.e. Donald Trump. Right? You know? So, yeah, man. The Obamas, man, cashing them Netflix checks, man. And I ain't mad at them. I am not mad at them whatsoever. Another thing that's been going on in the news, man, that we haven't had a chance to talk about, and I thought this was very interesting, man. Yo, Harvey Weinstein was fucking arrested for sexual assault. Dig that, right? So, you know, do I have this story or do I not? I don't see this in my pocket. So I'm not, okay, so here's what we're going to do. We just gonna talk about it, right? Because I thought I had it in my pocket and I don't. But Harvey Weinstein was arrested for sexual assault, right? And the interesting thing about this was, this takes, well, One thing I want to know, like, which network was Harvey Weinstein bought to buy? It couldn't have been NBC, because NBC has been sold 1,000 times already since Bill Cosby, right? So was it ABC? Was it CBS? Was it TNT? Was he going to buy fucking, I don't know, the Science Channel, the fucking Hallmark Channel? What network was Harvey Weinstein about to buy that precipitated him going ahead and getting locked the fuck up for sexual assault, right? Because one of the things that, you know, a lot of Bill Cosby defenders would say was that, like, yo, this is just another example of the white man coming down on a black man and, you know, being unfairly targeted for the shit that he did, right? And never mind that Bill Cosby kind of admitted the shit that he did in a deposition 12, 13 years ago in the case against the woman, well, with the woman who said that he did these things to her. But somehow Bill Cosby was being lynched, publicly lynched and unfairly targeted and all these other things, right? And what about Roman Polanski? What about Harvey Weinstein? Well, Harvey Weinstein is arrested. Roman Polanski is a fugitive from the law. He can't come back to this country. If he does step foot on this country's soil, he's going to be locked up. You know, what about Woody Allen? Like all these different fucking whataboutisms that kind of keep coming up, and we're going to talk about the whataboutisms a little bit later when it comes to some other shit. It's amazing how, like, these people never really see themselves on the same side of the coin of people that they hate, but it's going to be a real twist when we get to later in the show. But yeah, all these whataboutisms, man. Like, so what do you say about this now that Harvey Weinstein has been locked up? Like, can you say that Bill Cosby is still being unfairly targeted if Harvey Weinstein is being locked up? Can we do that? Is that something that we're doing? I kind of doubt it, right? So yeah, man, that's going on, man. Harvey Weinstein got locked up for sexual assault. Bill Cosby got fucking convicted of rape. R. Kelly's music was being targeted on streaming services, and concerts of him being canceled all across the country, man. Yo, civility, if America hadn't been showing me its ass for the last 10 years, man, civility and common sense look like it might be making a reappearance here in the United States, man. I doubt it, but at least it gives me a little bit of hope, right? You know, I'm cynical as all hell lately, man, but yeah, man, maybe give me a little bit of hope, man. But for that, man, that has been our news, man, real talk. So yeah, let's go ahead and break out of that. All right, enough of that shit, man. We going in our blue blazers.
What in blue blazers is going on out here? This nigga just say blue blazers.
All right, man. And what in blue blazers, man? We got a few different stories to talk about, right? So one of the first things in blue blazers that I did want to talk about was the fact that, yo, we've got a story. Oh, shit. Where did it go? Let me do this here. Man, Pocket is out of control today, baby. But one of the stories that I wanted to talk about, man, in Blue Blazers actually deals with the police, because the police are out here acting real fucking foul, man. They actually, where is this shit? Is it in my Facebook? No. That's not it either. And that's not it either. Damn it, I'm going to have to search for this shit live on the air. Ain't that some shit? Hold on a second. Police fake breathalyzer. All right, is this story up? Okay. Here we go. Here's the story I was looking for right here. Jesus Christ, right here live on the air, man. Since Victorian police faked more than 280,000 breath tests by blowing into the breathalyzers themselves so that they can meet their fucking quota, man. It says Victoria police have come under fire after an internal investigation found that they had faked 258,463 breath tests. They have issued a statewide directive following reports police officers were blowing into the straw themselves, resulting in preliminary breath tests. claims of the practice whereby an officer either places a finger over the straw entry hole or blows into the straw themselves were first reported to Victoria Police late last year, police said in a statement. Road policing and professional standard commands, together with statistical specialists, commenced an intelligence assessment of over 5 years of PBT activity as soon as the issue was raised. Now, is this in, wait, where is this? Is this in England? Or is it in Canada? It doesn't seem to be here in the United States. It says Professional Standards Command's Assistant Commissioner Russell Baird addressed the situation on Wednesday, revealing that the investigation concluded that 258,463 preliminary breath tests and of the 17.7 million tests were falsified. The investigation, which analyzed over 5 years of data, 1,500 preliminary breath test devices, and more than 17.7 million tests, disproportionately found that 258,463 breath tests, or 1.5% of all tests, had been falsified. Now, you know, when I first heard about this story, somebody, like, it was presented as if it was shocking, and I'm not shocked by any of this shit at all. Like, anybody who's had any sort of, like, repeated interactions with the police, kind of know that, like, everything with the police ain't on the up and up. Everybody don't always look at the police as if they're, like, the knights in shining armor coming to save us. Sometimes the police are doing us harm, and we know this, and we seeing this every day. I wasn't surprised, man. I'm actually surprised the number is that low. 1.5%. That's what I'm actually surprised by. I would have thought it was a lot higher than that. But think about this. Over 254,000 times they faked the shit. Like, how many people may have been locked up and given DUIs behind that, you know, that sort of thing, man? Like, how many could have had that happen to them? Like, and you think about, like, some folks who have their jobs tied into their, like, their driver's licenses, and you have, you know, a drunk driving, you know, conviction on your record and everything else, and come to find out this was the police involved with that, and that the police were, like, the ones who were actually breathing in. Like, yo, man, it's a lot. It's a lot. So, yeah, man, that was actually something that was, I found interesting, and I, like, yo, man, what the fuck? Like, what in Blue Blazes is going on with this shit, right? Another story, man, in Blue Blazes, and this is actually something that is a little bit more fucked up, is R. Kelly, man. So, of course, you guys know, I just spoke about R. Kelly. He was having concerts canceled all over the country. You know, Spotify was talking about no longer you know, featuring his music on, like, you know, curated playlists and things like that. I think other streaming services like Apple Music kind of picked up on that sort of shit and everything. But amidst all of these things, R. Kelly decided that he was going to talk about it to a group of, you know, supporters or whatever. Looks like a room full of dudes, right? And this is what R. Kelly had to say about all of these things surrounding him, the controversy surrounding him and his career. Check this out, y'all.
Mute R. Kelly movement.
Okay, I don't want to hear their commentary at all.
This new policy. The singer has.
Okay, yeah. Get on.
Video recently surfaced. Here can be heard bold.
Okay, dude.
Here's a piece of that video.
Big I got dog. A million motherfuckers hating me. A 40 dog. Billion motherfuckers loving me.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm gonna tell you something. I'm gonna take this musical shit, and I'm gonna inject these motherfuckers with this musical, beautiful motherfucking shit.
No, these don't do that. I can't afford no more kids.
No. I am handcuffed, yeah. Like a lot of you motherfuckers. I'm handcuffed by my destiny. It's too late. They should have did this shit 30 years ago.
All right. It's clear that this motherfucker is drunk as shit while he's talking right now. But also, it's interesting that it's a room full of dudes who are, like, you know, they've kind of ensconced this nigga in support. They've kind of, I want to say, they've insulated this dude, right? And this is sort of insulation that kind of makes this dude feel like, yo, whatever it is that I'm doing must be okay, because there are a contingency of people who are around me who are telling me that this is all right. I'm not being condemned by these folks. It almost reminds me of, like, a time, excuse me, there was a time when the Huffington Post had a live stream of R. Kelly. They were doing a live interview with R. Kelly. And I remember being in that live stream and they were folks in the chat room. They were asking questions because it was supposed to be open to the public, and the public could ask questions and everything else. I remember it was me. I remember Sterling from Gaming and Then Some was in that chat room. I remember the homeboy Chris from Movie Trailer Reviews was in that chat room, and we were all asking this guy questions. Right now, the thing about it was, the interviewer was asking R. Kelly questions. They were really shielding him from a lot of stuff. But even some of the questions that the interviewer was asking of R. Kelly, the dude was like, I don't know. I don't see this. I don't see any of that. You know, when I go to an R. Kelly show, I don't see none of that stuff. As if, and it almost makes sense in the sense that, like, he's surrounded by people who are looking to get something out of his success. Like there's something to be said about. There's something to be said about folks who are involved in really fucked up, seedy, insidious behavior, and the people around them, especially if this person is profitable. If this dude was selling McDonald's, if this dude was like behind the cash register at a Rally's or a Checkers or some shit, if he sold Popeyes, if he was the dude that worked on your car, there wouldn't be a whole, these same contention of motherfuckers would not be as apt to take up for him in the ways in which they are. But because this dude is profitable and they can see themselves getting some money up off of this, hey man, we probably need to, we need to protect this bag. We need to protect this motherfucker who maybe he out here doing some shit that could fuck it up. But if we protect him a little bit, we might still be able to kind of, you know, win off of this, right? Same thing with Kanye West. You know, Kanye West out here saying some reckless, dumb, foul shit, but there's a whole lot of motherfuckers who really need Kanye West to get out here and cook for him so that they can benefit themselves. So the same thing goes here with R. Kelly. Like, he's got a contingency of dudes who is sitting around here making it okay to where, like, yo, they should have did this 30 years ago. Right? It's contingent upon the people who are outraged at your continued fucking victimization of young black girls and young black women. They should have did this 30 years ago. Oh, better yet, how about you not fucking trying to fuck babies and shit for as long as you have been? But there's more.
It's too late. The music has been injected into the world. Okay? I hired my motherfucking self.
Now, interestingly enough, when he says the music has been injected into the world and that it's too late, to some degree, he's right. He's right. I just came back home from Chicago. I was there. Matter of fact, this wasn't even my grandma's birthday party. It was another backyard party that another relative was throwing. And they had a DJ on there. And the DJ threw on a backyard party, a song by R. Kelly, right? Now, I'm sitting there. And, you know, y'all know how I feel about this shit. Like, I'm just like, here this shit go. But when I go home to Chicago, it's almost expected, right? I mean, I know I'm going to hear something of R. Kelly's. Because there's, like, yo, like, when it comes to, like, there's a lot of people who separate this dude from his actions. They separate his actions from the music. And so as long as they're able to, like, kind of, you know, wiggle their butts a little bit, they all right. You know what I'm saying? Whereas with me, it's hard for me to turn off the fact that a lot of the dude's content centers around his sexual exploits with underage girls and underage, like in his victimization of them. So, like, it's hard for me to separate that. And I can't, I can't, in good conscience, just see it be like, oh yeah, this my shit, yeah. Like, I can't do it. Nah. And it'd be written all over my motherfucking face too, man. I'm just sitting there like, all right, I guess. Tell me when this shit goes off. Somebody let me know something. Right? But there's, you know, all over the country, there are still people who are willing to go spend money to go see R. Kelly. There are still people who are willing to spend money to buy R. Kelly CDs and buy his album on iTunes or buy it on Google Play. Like, these people are still willing to spend their monies because they enjoy him despite everything that this dude has been accused of and everything that we know this dude to have done. They don't care. They don't care. And that's a sad commentary on the that's the sad commentary on the, like, the entire thing concerning R. Kelly, is how much folks just really don't care concerning this particular issue, man. So R. Kelly says we should have did this 30 years ago, as if folks haven't been trying to get this dude up out of the paint for the better part of the last 20 years. right? So yeah, that's in Blue Blazers, man. Another thing in Blue Blazers, yo, how in the fuck, yo, man, yo, Rachel Dolezal, man. Rachel Dolezal is in Wedding Blue Blazers. Y'all want to know why, man? Rachel Dolezal is out here with the motherfucking welfare fraud, y'all.
What?
Rachel Dolezal is out here with the welfare fraud.
What?
I said Rachel Dolezal is out here with the welfare fraud. Yeah, man. Rachel Dolezal got caught out here lying about her benefits, man. So, damn it. I had this story too. Yo, hold on. Let me. this shit can't be happening to me right now. So, let's see if we can pull that up. Would it be here? Nope. All right, let's do this again. Jesus Christ. Dolezal in the news. All right, so here we go. Rachel Dolezal, who portrayed herself as a black woman, is accused of welfare fraud. This story here comes out of CNN. It says Rachel Dolezal, who represented herself as a black woman for years and once headed a local chapter of the NAACP in Washington State, is facing charges of welfare fraud. Dolezal made headlines in 2015 after her relatives revealed that she was born white and had posed as black for years. At the time, she headed the Spokane, Washington chapter of the NAACP and taught African American studies. Dolezal was charged this week with theft by welfare fraud, perjury, and false verification for public assistance, court documents show. She is accused of making false statements to get about $9,000 in food and child care assistance. The Spokane County Prosecutor's Office says she failed to report her self-employment income accurately, resulting in an overpayment of $8,847 from the Department of Social and Health Services. Now, interestingly enough, man, this does nothing to help race relations when it comes to welfare in America, right? Like, there's a whole bunch of white folks who would definitely take this to like, well, maybe she is black, you know, because them niggers, man, they don't want to work. They just want to sit on their ass and get them Obama phones and everything, man. And I got to go out here and I got to work at the factory, and the factory is paying me $13 an hour, but $7 is going toward the welfare that these niggers is trying to get a hold of. Maybe that damn woman is a welfare. Maybe she is black. I can't tell. I don't know. But yeah, man, Rachel Dolezal is like taking this way too far when it comes to her impersonation, supposedly, of black people, right? By actually perpetuating a racial stereotype to the point where she gets charged with fraud. She didn't get charged for fraud. Oh, wait. This is the rich part about it. She didn't get charged for fraud for presenting herself as a black person to the world. She got charged for fraud for the money. You got to follow the money. Like, she was out here, she had that little book deal, and I think she got like $10,000 out of that book deal. She also got that Netflix documentary that came out about, you know, that came out about her. I'm sure she got paid off of that. And yet she didn't report it, and she owes the government a little bit over $8,000. I wonder. Hey, man. Rachel Dolezal can't stay her ass out of the news. She just can't do it. It's like she's incapable of doing it. Like, maybe going to jail might keep her out of the news for a minute. I don't know. But yeah, man, Rachel Dolezal, welfare fraud, and that has been What in Blue Blazes.
What in Blue Blazes is going on out here? Did this nigga just say Blue Blazes?
All right, so we're going to be coming up into our next segment. Now, this segment has, I don't know, man. This might be a regular thing lately, the way that the country has been going as of late. But we got our proud to be an American. proud to be an American, man. This week in racism, proud to be an American. This shit is kind of interchangeable. And I cannot find my damn music. Where is it? That's not it either. And that's not it. This is embarrassing. Oh shit, I really can't find it. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna do that's not it either. Here we go.
That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
All right. Proud to be an American. Jesus. I had to relabel the damn the sound clip. Yeah, man. But, yo, this is Proud to be an American. The story we got today, man, is Roseanne, yo. Roseanne Barr stepped in it. Roseanne Barr went and did what everybody in with a half a brain thought that Roseanne Barr was going to do. Roseanne Barr got on Twitter and said some racist shit and compared Valerie Jarrett to that. Said that Valerie Jarrett would be the offspring of the Muslim Brotherhood and an ape.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah, let me go back here. So, this is, this is actually pretty fucked up, right? So, ABC, after Roseanne Barr tweeted this out, and of course, by the time you're hearing this, you've already heard, but ABC fired her, canceled her show, took that shit off of Hulu, took all the old episodes off the television, and then went on ahead and, like, I think Country Music Television took her shit off. Like, all of these networks, they decided to take her stuff off, right? Now, one thing is for sure, I'm surprised by how quickly all of a sudden racism was being dealt with in media, right? Because for the longest time, and ever since Trump became a real thing for, like, politics and race in America, man, like, we've gotten to a point where we can't even call shit what the fuck it is anymore, especially when it comes to racism. Like, all of a sudden, like, we've got these gray areas. Well, is it really racism? Like, yeah, this has been racism since forever. The shit didn't change. It's always been racism. Is it really? Like, yeah, it is. It is, right? So, reading this story here, this comes out of Deadline.com. It says, ABC has abruptly canceled Roseanne Barr's hit comedy series revival following a morning in which the star launched a tirade of racist and anti-Semitic tweets. Roseanne's Twitter statement is abhorrent, repugnant, and inconsistent with our values, and we have decided to cancel her show, ABC Entertainment President Channing Dungey just announced. All references to the show have already been removed from ABC's press site. Barr's family sitcom, the biggest success story of the 2017-18 TV season, had been picked up for a second season after only one episode, which clocked record ratings. Roseanne was the highest rated and most watched freshman series of 2017-18 season and ranked number 2 overall in all entertainment programs and total viewers, 17.82 million in the Live Plus 7, and the adults 18 to 49 demographic, a 5.0 rating. It was also ABC's highest rated TV series, cornerstone of the network's upfront presentation earlier this month, which is opened by Barr. Now, the thing is, Roseanne Barr, we knew that there was issues with Roseanne Barr before the show came back, right? Like, folks knew that Roseanne Barr was kind of off of her rocker, that this wasn't the Roseanne that folks kind of grew to love, you know, back in the day, like back in the 90s and shit. I remember we spoke about, you know, the reboot of this show right here on this show, where I talked about, you know, I'm not going to watch. And I didn't watch. I didn't stream. I didn't do any of those things. But a lot of folks did. And it started slowly trailing off. You hear the news that, like, you know, it's slowly starting to trail off. I think initially everybody was kind of curious as to what it was going to be. And then after they found out what it was going to be, then it was like, all right, whatever. And, you know, it kind of trailed off a bit. But, like, yo, you knew. They knew. ABC knew that this was going to be a problem when they hired her, right? So all of the talk about, yo, ABC did the right thing, and ABC, we got to applaud them for, like, their swift, and, you know, they were really swift in their decisions and all this other shit. Like, yeah, I hear you, but ABC totally ignored all of this shit when it was expedient for them to make money, right? Like, yo, we got to reach out to these Trump voters, these people who are forgotten across America, man. You know, the people who don't think that they're being talked to anymore. You know, they feel left out of the mainstream, right? And it's real interesting. It's real interesting to, like, watch how people talk about the mainstream media and people being left out of, you know, how mainstream media views the country and all these things. These are folks who have a disdain for mainstream media. These are folks who call people who are educated the elites. You think you're all that with your goddamn fancy ass education, huh? Well, I tell you this, you ain't no better than me, and I get out here and I bust your ass, goddammit. You're not gonna make me feel bad about who I am as an American, right? You know, you got some people, yeah, right? But, you know, like, it's interesting to, like, watch these folks who don't necessarily like mainstream media and, like, you know, social media, you know, what they would call elites or whatever, but they also want that same sort of attention. They want to be courted. They want to be loved. They want to be brought in. They want to be felt like they're part of something bigger than themselves, right? And that's not to say, it's not to say that something's wrong with that. It's just the way in which they go about how they want to be loved and how they want to be adored and how they want to be brought in and the ideas that they bring with them, right? And so Roseanne, she's had like some anti-Semitic views. She's had anti-Black views. She's had, you know, like, you know, really strident, alternative, conspiracy theorist kind of views. And she said some reckless shit before on Twitter, and then she has to go back and delete the tweets and all this other stuff. But, you know, it's Twitter. It's the internet. It lasts forever. People have screenshots. They have what, you know, you said this shit. And she apologized, right? So after she gets her show taken off of ABC and, you know, everybody's going in on her, she apologizes. And she says, well, you know, I was on Ambien, right? I was up late night. I was up late at night and I was on the Ambien. I'm tripping off the Ambien and everything else. And that's why I tweeted out what I said, to the point where Ambien is now trending on Twitter. And Ambien is like, yo, check this out. So, that's some bullshit. And, one of the side effects of using our drug is not for you to become subtly racist by being on our shit. So we would respectfully ask for you to not keep, like, for you to keep our motherfucking name right out of your mouth, right? Keep our name out of your mouth, you know? And then on top of that, like, she comes out, she apologizes, but then she says, like, she didn't know Valerie Jarrett was Black, as if that would have made it any better, or that, like, this is the first time that she thinks that we know that she's called another Black woman, you know, and compared them to an ape. She did it to Susan Rice back in 2013. I told you, those screenshots are forever. Called Susan Rice, compared her to an ape's nuts, but, you know, you get the drift. So this isn't the first time she's done this. She's done it repeatedly. And so, like, she does this, and all of a sudden we start hearing, like, conservative voices are coming out, right? And they are up in arms about the fact that, like, yo, this is free speech. Okay, Roseanne is exercising free speech. She should be able to say whatever she wants. True. And Roseanne did say whatever it was she wanted. And Roseanne isn't in jail right now. And Roseanne isn't being persecuted by the government right now, which is the only thing that the First Amendment protects you from, right? She isn't free from these motherfucking consequences, right? Now, there's some equivalencies being leveled out now. You know, all the whataboutisms. Remember I was talking about, like, you know, with Bill Cosby and, like, you know, some of his supporters. Now, all of a sudden, conservative folks out here with the, well, what about Bill Maher? Bill Maher compared Donald Trump to a goddamn orangutan. And interestingly enough, I had a friend this week say to Black folks, would you feel as upset about Roseanne calling Donald Trump an orangutan, right? Like, would you be as upset if that's what she did? And the thing is, I guess I'm gonna have to, like, you know, with them and with, like, with some of the white folks who may be listening, who may not even be familiar with this concept, but there is a historical difference and a power dynamic involved in comparing Black people to apes and calling Donald Trump an orangutan, right? You know, for years, decades, centuries, Black people in America, probably, I mean, to a certain degree in Europe and South America and Africa too, by white colonizers and things of that nature, compared Black people to apes as a way to dehumanize them, as a way to not look at them as if they are on equal footing as white men in stature. And they had to dehumanize you in ways that made it okay for them to treat you badly. So when this sort of language is being used, it isn't like, just, you can't just pass this shit off as a joke. Because it's not. It's rooted in a lot of history and a lot of pain and a lot of suffering comes behind it. Now, I remember when I was, like, take for instance, when I went to go get my wisdom tooth pulled a few weeks ago, and I was at the dentist's office and he was telling me, he went to, like, something in me was just like, this is some bullshit. But he told me that, like, yo, African Americans have stronger bones or thicker bones than every other group. Right? Talking about Asian people, talking about white people. African Americans have, you know, tougher bones, right? Now, I want you to, like, kind of go back into this, right? So, understand that, like, during slave times, man, folks were using their slaves for pretty much everything, right? A lot of medical research was done on unwilling and folks who didn't have a choice, slaves, right? A lot of gynecological stuff was happening on black women during this time. A lot of techniques and procedures and a lot of tools and apparatuses were being developed on, you know, and for use on these slaves who were being experimented on at the time. And at that time, they wouldn't even give slaves or black folks, they wouldn't even give these folks anesthesia for pain. They wouldn't, like, knock them out. They wouldn't do any of these things. They would just operate on them. They would just use these tools on them. They would use these apparatuses on them in order to just kind of, you know, figure out what they felt like they were going to discover, right? So as this is going on, they're treating these black folks, well, they're using these tools and they're experimenting on these black folks, and they're doing it in much the same way that, like, yo, they would do it on an animal. You're testing these things out on these people and you're doing it on them like you would on an animal. And even when it came to, like, the work that slaves did, yo, you worked them from sun up to sundown. They even said it, like, yo, like, the slaves did not need the same amount of sleep as humans because why? They didn't think that we were fucking human. So all of this goes back into the joke of a black person as an ape, right? There's that history dynamic involved. There's that power dynamic involved. And when you can treat people, and when you can start calling people other than what they are as people, and you can start referring to them as something similar to an ape or any other animal, then you no longer have to treat them on equal footing as you would another person. We're seeing this now with a lot of rhetoric that comes out of Donald Trump's mouth when it comes to immigration and some of the people who are coming up from down south, from Mexico, from El Salvador, from Guatemala, a lot of these South and Central American countries. He's calling them animals, right? And if you can call them animals, you can treat them any way you want to because they are not considered equal to you. You treat them like you would a dog that you don't care about. You treat them like you would a cat. A stray cat, a feral cat, like, just out and about. You don't give a fuck about that damn animal. That's how you would talk to black people. That's how you treat black people. So that whole idea that this was just a joke and that this is just free speech. Now, it's hate speech. It's hate speech. And as Americans, we shouldn't have to tolerate hate speech. You should be condemned the moment that bullshit come out your mouth. Everybody should be like, man, look at this stupid motherfucker right here. That's how you should be looked at. You should be embarrassed that sort of stupid shit comes out of your damn mouth, that it comes off your keyboard, that it comes out of your YouTube video, that you present this in any sort of way as a valid fucking thought. You should be looked at as a goddamn fool, right? But you got a lot of conservative folks now who are talking about free speech and they want to do the whataboutisms. You know, the whole thing about Donald Trump being called an orangutan, like, as if that even has the same level of fucking hurt attached to it. Right? Donald Trump may look like an orangutan because he tans and he got an orange face. Nobody did that to Donald Trump. Donald Trump did that to himself. White people don't have the trope of being compared to an ape attached to their whiteness. White people haven't been dehumanized with being compared to an ape with their likeness. Never. It's never happened. They've done it to other. They've done it to everybody though. They've done it to other people. So it doesn't have the same weight. It doesn't hold the same power. Right? I guess in a sense, like you notice how like when white folks they want to say nigga real bad, like they really want that word back. A lot of it is we've kind of taken some of that power out of some of the power out of the word because we use it amongst ourselves and we kind of taken it from them and we made them feel like they, yo, if you say this shit, you gonna get your ass beat by one of us, right? But they really do want to say that word. They really do. So much so that, like, yo, there was a young lady who went to a Kendrick Lamar concert a couple weeks ago, said the word, you know, because he rapped it in a song, and he, like, kind of called her out on it, and everybody like, well, why'd he set her up like that? He's got the words in the songs. You know goddamn well you ain't supposed to be saying that. It ain't rocket science. But they really want to say that word. And the reason why they want to say that word, it's not because they want to connect with us. There's history behind them saying that word and why it's not acceptable. And it's not a double standard. It's not fucking hypocritical to say that, yeah, I can say this and you can't. But here's the historical reasons why. Here are the reasons why. So, you know, part of this whole thing, man, that I want to kind of show y'all was like the as much as conservatives don't necessarily like, you know, they're not really fans of the mainstream media and everything else. They really do want to be lauded and, you know, loved in the mainstream. So check this out. This is actually a segment on the Don Lemon show. He's speaking with, let's see, let's just play it because I don't know this lady's name.
For saying, for being a womanizer,
I think
for saying misogynistic things.
Everyone is redeemable, including the president, including you, including Madonna says she wants to blow up the White House, everything that on HBO.
Please, we want to educate our viewers. We don't want to.
You guys, you know, Carrie and I in many ways are on the same side of the ideological fence, but honestly, as a conservative, Carrie, I beseech you, look at this problem for what it is. Let's have a conversation about the actual issue, not the ancillary issues, not the whataboutism issues. This is something we have to face directly. If you want to have ABC be accountable for other people, that's a separate discussion, and that's a separate matter. What we have right now is a person who behaved in a way that went way past... Carrie, wait just 1 second. This is a person who went way past the boundary levels.
For using the N-word.
And way past the...
We talked about it on the show. Okay, so now we're talking about.
We have a situation right now where you have a person who's in the very center of this political debate, and the questions we're answering right now are about Roseanne and about these tweets and about what happened. And I think it's a very legitimate question to ask for accountability broadly among institutions. However, in this case, we're talking about Roseanne. We're talking about what happened here and the character and nature of it here. And if you find yourself lured into this argument that what about Hillary, what about Barack, what about Jay-Z, you're not answering the real question. And that diminishes the impact of the moral answer you have to have when people display anti-Semitism and outright racism in this country. You have to do that. And as a conservative, that's how I approach it. Not because I'm some liberal social justice warrior, but because I think racism is an abhorrent, disgusting, horrifying practice. And when we see it, we have to call it. When we see it, we have to hammer it down. We have to spray it like a cockroach. And we have to stomp it out. And I'm sorry, trying to, you know, throw up the chaff and the flack on this other stuff, it's just not where we need to go as conservatives, Carrie.
You can't sweep that other stuff under the rug, Rick. I agree with everything you said. Racism is disgusting.
Let's hold institutions accountable. But what you're trying to do here is throw up this chaff and say, oh, we can't talk about this because we have to talk about Jay-Z.
It's the fact that Hollywood is 90% liberal, and conservatives have been shut out of that town and mocked and demonized.
Okay, produce better content. Produce better content. We're in the marketplace and win. We can't fix it.
Talking point number 87.
Pretending that it's Hillary.
Talking point number 87, number 89, whatever. All right. 87 talked about it.
Eminem can insult the president, and yet he also is misogynistic, and he's applauded by Hollywood.
Bye.
Bye, Don.
We'll be right back.
All right, so, and I want to, damn it, escape. I want to exit full screen. Thank you. Yeah, so, like, there's really this longing for acceptance from, like, what they would consider the elite. But at the same time, they don't really like those people, right? And they would try to, a lot of this is them trying to make themselves out to be victims in ways in which they are not. Roseanne Barr isn't a victim. Donald Trump isn't a victim. These are people who are both in two power positions. How then can you call them aggrieved for being held accountable for what the fuck it is they do and or say? It makes no sense. And for all the folks who were like, you know, talking about, you know, well, Roseanne, you know, like they're surprised by what happened. Like, yo, that tiger with tiger kind of thing. Like, how can you be surprised at what we got when it came to Roseanne? We knew what this was going to be. Black folks were telling you what this was going to be. Before that show ever hit the air, people knew what that shit was. Right? So, yeah, man. It's been a wild week when it comes to like racism and like politics and all of this stuff, man. But that's not all. That's not all. We have another story here in Proud to Be an American, man. We have another story. This here is actually really, really fucking stupid. There was a transgender woman in a Denny's using the bathroom. And a Republican candidate for Congress thought it was appropriate to harass this woman while she was using the bathroom. So we got this video here. This actually comes out of CBS LA. And let me pull up the share screen again so you guys can check this out with me. Because this is just, wow. But there we go. So let me pull that up. And yeah, here we are.
There was an angry confrontation over gender at a bathroom in a local Denny's. It was streamed live on Facebook.
That confrontation happened at a Denny's in Koreatown. The video has now gone viral.
And that's where CBS 2's Amy Johnson is with reaction. And Amy, you spoke to the woman who took the video, huh?
That's right, Pat and Suzanne. Her name is Jasmina Saavedra, and she says that she live streamed the encounter inside of this Denny's restaurant for proof of what happened and for her protection. Others say she was just being a bully, trying to embarrass a transgender person.
I'm trying to use the ladies' room with a man inside saying he's a lady.
Jasmina Saavedra live streamed this encounter at a Denny's restaurant Tuesday when she got upset about a person she thought was a man using the women's restroom.
You're invading my privacy.
Excuse me, I was using the toilet. How do I make your
why are you
singling me out, lady, for no reason?
We need to have a proof that women are in danger.
The mother and...
Okay. So, I remember a couple years ago, 2016, as a matter of fact, before that, like around 2015, that this started becoming an issue politically and in social spaces, right? Like, all of a sudden, people were like, especially like right around the time that Caitlyn Jenner made her transition from Bruce Jenner, right? And folks are talking about like, well, where does he use the bathroom? And, you know, what kind of sex does he have? Is he still attracted to women and all these other things, right? And folks are real confused about, you know, gender identification and sexual orientation and all these other things. It's not that hard to figure out, but yo, that's like people were acting like they had to do all sorts of mental gymnastics in order to get this thing done and like get it right, right? And so I remember the right. I remember the Republicans. I remember them making this an issue. I remember Kim Davis being able to obstruct same-sex couples from being able to get marriage licenses in Kentucky and being held as a hero for doing so. I remember, you know, all of a sudden, like people, we got to start passing all of these bathroom laws. You know, we can't have transgender people going into the bathroom pretending to be women when they really men, and then they assault somebody we know. Now, truth be told, out of all of the hoopla that came out of that, I don't know how many, have any of you guys seen any real major news story concerning a transgender person who assaulted a straight person or someone who was posing as a transgender person assaulting a woman in the bathroom since 2015? Has any of us seen any of that on any mainstream whatsoever? Have we seen any of this? Have we even seen it on Fox News? We haven't. because it was some bullshit story made up to make people, like, it was a made up issue. And we've said on this show that, yo, man, guess where they been going to the bathroom at before y'all start talking all this shit? Guess where they been going? To the bathroom that they identify with, or that their gender identifies with. That's where they've been going. And it wasn't an issue until politicians decided to make it an issue, make it a wedge issue, make it something for you to discriminate against somebody else with. And it is no surprise that as a Republican candidate for Congress, someone who aligns with them politically is the one who is out here harassing folks in the bathroom. But we're going to continue this video.
Grandmother is running for the 44th congressional district.
As a woman, I have the right to feel comfortable and secure in a private restaurant.
Next time, use the men's room.
I think this video show who is the victim actually in this video and who is the person who is harassing and discriminating against.
Mariana Marikin is the program manager for the Trans Wellness Center.
I was in shock. It's painful because I'm part of the community and I think we need to keep talking about this.
She says people need to understand the law.
You use the restaurant that is you identify with. That's the right in California. And I think that's something that she needs to be informed, especially when she's running for office.
Saavedra's video has been viewed by thousands of people.
You feel good about what you did?
Of course.
Of course she feels good to be a bigot.
You shouldn't have done that.
Well, first of all, the law shouldn't be passed.
Denny's released a statement that reads in part, "There is no place for discrimination of any kind in our restaurants. We do apologize to our transgender guests and others in the restaurant that had to endure another customer's disrespectful behavior." Now, Saavedra says that she wants those bathroom laws changed. Marikin says she wants Saavedra to come to the Trans Wellness Center so she can better understand transgender people and what they have to endure every time they need to use a restroom.
All right. So, yeah, that's going on. You know, there was a video and I didn't play that. I didn't play the video that she took. But the person with whom she was harassing was in a bathroom stall using the toilet while she stood outside of the bathroom stall videotaping them saying, "You're a man. You need to get out of here. I need to use it. You're like, I want to use the restroom." Well, if you didn't have your fucking video camera and you set up your video camera before you walked into that bathroom to videotape that person, you could have just used the fucking bathroom and get the hell up out of there. If that's what you needed to do. But that's not what you needed to do. You're trying to make a point. A political point. And at the same time, while you were trying to make that point, you were harassing somebody for using the fucking toilet. Something that you say you want to do unobstructed, right? You want to feel safe. That person wanted to feel safe too while they were using the goddamn bathroom. So, yeah, man. Proud to be a motherfucking American, man. Talk.
That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
All right, shit. But we're coming up towards the end of the show. But of course, before we go, we gotta do this, man.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
We got our ass hat of the week this weekend. They are none other than Diamond and Silk, man. You know, interestingly enough, this is the first time that Diamond and Silk have been able to get the Ass Hat of the Week award here at the Spare and Poor Podcast, man. You'd have thought that they would have been here sooner, but they aren't. They weren't. But they earned that motherfucker this week, man. They have definitely earned it this week. So, I'm going to have to edit all of that out when I put this show out. But, yo, so Diamond and Silk are the Ass Hat of the Week. And the reason that they're the Ass Hat of the Week is in the fallout of Roseanne being taken off of ABC for her racist, you know, tweet about Valerie Jarrett and comparing her to apes, Diamond and Silk felt so aggrieved that they went to Fox News and they spoke with Maria Bartiromo, and they said that the racism runs both ways and it comes from both sides and it's just as equally as hurtful. So check this out. This is what they had to say on Cavuto on Fox News.
There's no room. There's no tolerance for
and
racism.
Just calm it down. There is no tolerance for that, for any kind of racism on either
right.
side.
That's
it can't
right.
be one-sided here. That's what I'm trying to make.
Yeah.
We can't always point the finger at every white person when my black brothers and sisters is calling us out of our name
exactly.
and calling us the same derogatory
Tory
name.
Names.
Ben Carson was just called a porch monkey. Nobody said nothing about that journalist,
right.
yet everybody want to go after Roseanne.
What journalist called Ben Carson porch monkey?
Journalist called him that.
Well, this is what we're hearing. Yes.
Right.
Oh, this is what we're hearing.
She took the tweet down, the so-called journalist. Took the tweet down.
But didn't apologize.
Okay, but I'm sure if she did say that, and she was a journalist, and people saw that, they would have screenshot it before she took it down. The same way they do the shit with Roseanne, and the same way they do it with every motherfucking body else.
But didn't apologize
That's
for
right.
it. But you see, it can't be a double standard.
Yeah.
You know, racism is not just about white. Racism, if you are spewing it, then you need to stop doing it.
That's right.
It's
ignorance across the
Absolutely.
Board.
Absolutely.
And it comes in many forms.
That's right.
And this is why like folks like Diamond and Silk and the recent events with Kanye West and with that Candace Wright, I'm sorry, that Crystal Wright, you know, clone Candace Owens. Like, there is the insidiousness of making white people feel comfortable in their racism by saying, well, you know what? Other people do it too. Therefore, what you're doing isn't all that bad because other people are doing this too. And yeah. You know, we got to stamp it out and everything else. But what about everybody else? What about all the stuff that they, Ben Carson was called a porch monkey by a journalist. She didn't name the journalist. Couldn't even point to the tweet, but she made it. She just leveled that out there. And now that's out into the ether. That's out into the atmosphere. And all of these racist motherfuckers who decide that, like, yo, I'm okay with what I'm doing. And here are two niggers who are saying that it's all right what I'm doing because the niggers are just as bad as I am. This is what it gives license to. And so for Diamond and Silk to, like it's amazing, man. I don't know how much being a coon pays, but it's got to be good money. It's got to be good money. I mean, I refuse to believe that some self-respecting black folks would get on the good foot and start, you know, shucking and jiving on all these network television shows to denigrate their own. For what? I mean, so yeah, man, like it's just weird, man, to like just kind of watch this shit play out where we got to assuage the fears of these white racists, man. We got to do it. And like lap dogs ran out to say that, like, yo, black people doing it too. Fuck out of here, man. Fuck out of here. So yeah, man, Diamond and Silk are the asshats of the week this week here at the Spirit Report.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
But we do have a champ.
The champ is here.
All right, our champ this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast is none other than, well, you guys wouldn't know this guy. This guy's name is Eric Mason, man. Now, Eric Mason is the champ of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast. He's a franchise owner of a Chick-fil-A restaurant in California, right? And Eric Mason's view is that the living wage and minimum wage should be $17 an hour. Now, the reason that Eric Mason is the champ of the week this week here is not only that it's not only because he believes that, it's because he's actually putting it into practice in his own business, right? So I'm going to read this story here. This comes out of CBS News. It says the owner of a Chick-fil-A location in Sacramento, California, calls it a living wage. In Eric Mason's view, that would be $17 or $18 an hour, which is what he vows he'll be paying his workers starting Monday, June 4th. The rate represents a sizable increase for employees now making $12 to $13 an hour. As the owner, I'm looking at it big picture and long term, Mason told a local news station. What that does for the business is provide consistency, someone that has relationships with our guests and is going to be building a long term future. The idea, Mason said, is to hire workers he prefers, hospitality professionals, who will stick around, a worthwhile goal for a brand known for its customer service, that it's an industry standard that hit a 73% turnover rate in 2016, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. What we are going to be looking for is people trying to raise families, Mason said. Maybe they can work just one job. The median hourly pay for fast food employees in the U.S. is $8.26, according to the pay scale, with many making ends meet by working multiple jobs or even relying on public assistance. Mason's new gold standard at his Chick-fil-A store comes at a store in a state where the minimum wage is currently $11 for businesses with more than 25 workers and will increase a buck a year until it hits $15 by 2022. As union-led protests that came to be known as the Fight for 15 were sweeping the nation in 2015, McDonald's said it would set starting pay for 90,000 workers at company-owned stores at $1 above the minimum wage. Yet the fast food giant didn't keep pace with local wages and recently said it never intended to increase to be a policy thereafter. There are more than 2,200 Chick-fil-A restaurants across the U.S., most of them owned by franchisees. A Chick-fil-A spokesman noted that Mason's $17 to $18 an hour wage floor was his call, not the company's. Chick-fil-A restaurants are individually owned and operated, so wage decisions are made at the local level, the spokesman said, adding that many of our owner-operators began their careers as hourly team members. Now, I want to say a few things, man, about this. One, kudos to Eric Mason for making that decision. It's one of those things where I've seen pro-business folks get out and say that, like, yo, this is just the cost of doing business. You know, it's nothing personal, this, that, and the other. But there's something to be said about treating your workers good. And when you treat your workers well, your workers tend to want to do good jobs for you. And in return, they are treated well with their compensation. It's an even exchange. It doesn't have to be you do this or you out the door. I mean, you know, not all the time, right? And there's, you know, a lot of the pushback that a lot of folks have about giving, you know, minimum wage workers or raising the minimum wage. A lot of the pushback that you have is that you got a lot of people who are like, well, if they're making that amount of money, then I need to be getting paid more money because I went to school for my shit and they'll be making the same amount of money as me. When truth be told, you're mad at the wrong people. You should be mad at the motherfucker who is underpaying you right now, too, because you're also underpaid. And they're taking advantage of you. And so they got the middle class mad at the lower class while the upper class is making away like a bandit. So to watch, you know, to see a franchise owner of a fast food restaurant say that not only do I want to treat my workers well, but I want them to be able to live off the work that they are producing for me. That's commendable in a time where you got a lot of cynical people. You got a lot of resentful people who don't necessarily understand. And also, to a certain degree, would like to look down upon fast food workers and service workers and retail workers and whatever else. Would like to look down upon these people when they deserve when they have just as much dignity as anybody else. And they deserve the same amount of respect for going out there and working and doing an honest day's work as you would at your job. Only at your job, you probably don't have to deal with a simple, stupid motherfucker like you. So, yeah, man, Eric Mason is the champ of the week this week here at the Spirit Report Podcast, man, real talk. I'm about to get out of here. But before I go, of course, I got to remind you how to get in touch with us here at the Spirit Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit me up at the hotline, area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. I will play those messages here on the show, respond right here. You can also email me here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave those emails here, man, and I will read those emails here live on the show as well. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span, so go ahead and follow me. We can chop it up throughout the week. Follow the show's Twitter as well. That's at The Span Report, so go ahead and follow the show Twitter account. You can also reach me at, but you can go to thespanreport.com and get all your podcast needs, man. Yeah. You can go there, vote in the polls, watch replays of the show. You can donate to the show. You can leave comments on there. Everything's available there on not only just the Span Report, but the beer and chicken stuff. And you can go there and buy some stuff from the Span Report Podcast Network store from TeePublic. You go ahead and get everything there at thespinreport.com, man. Everything's available right there, man. But I'm about to get out of here. It was good talking to y'all, and I would do this again next week. But until next time, fam, peace.